Welcome to another chat on Awakenings, Chapter 7, Ebbs and Flow, Letting Go. This is a very short chapter, just makes a few points. It basically carries on from, obviously, Chapter 6. Amazing how that happened. But
it's a surprise.
Something new, something different, yeah. Did no books do that? So the reason I mentioned that wasn't just to state the obvious, but towards the end of Chapter 6, he's talking about relationships and all. Friendships, where it says, you know, even if they love you, you may on some level be filling a void within them, or so they would like at this time. So it talks about connections and certain things, talks about certain dynamics in relationships. So Chapter 7, Ebbs and Flow, goes a bit more into that from a slightly different angle. It talks about, in a sense, from the angle of the person that may be controlling or dominating their relationship. So that towards the end of Chapter 6, it talks about if you're on the receiving end, that goes into flips it. So the first chapter says it is the toing and froing that ultimately leads us back home into our true nature. That back and forth movement ensures we move forward and constantly tests our resolve. Obviously, if you keep getting hooked, you have not been able to see through those thoughts. Nothing you become hooked on will be seen through, and I mean nothing, if you do not turn that piercing light of discrimination into yourself. So end of chapter 6, talking about if someone's projecting onto you and blaming you for certain things within themselves. So at that point, first paragraph in chapter 7 talks about if you don't start turning that accusation or that your belief, your everything you're projecting, if you don't start looking into yourself, then you continue to be hooked because you're blaming another. Mm-hmm. And goes to the next paragraph where it says you must see what you crave from another. You must be completely honest, which may not be easy. We crave from another what we think we lack inside. An absolute truth is that we lack nothing. This is the truth at all times. It is only the belief within our thoughts that is stopping us from going beyond that veil. Our belief system limits us a lot of the time, or pretty much if we believe we're not good enough, or if we, and it's not about what you outwardly say, that I'm really good, or I'm the best at this, or I'm awesome. If you're suffering, if you have false beliefs within you, your beliefs create suffering, then your belief system is limiting you and obviously creating suffering, especially if you blame another for your suffering or for your pain in a relationship or whatever's going on, whatever's not working for you, if you're not feeling fulfilled, as long as you blame another, it's their fault that I'm not happy, and I'm not fulfilled, then you're saying that your life is dependent on another person. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's clear that other people can influence us, and it comes down to the space that another can facilitate around us. So likewise, we can't expect people to love us if we facilitate anger and we're projecting anger and being triggered in our environment. We go, why don't you love me? But if you're aggressive and harsh toward another person or towards whoever challenges you, then you're not facilitating a peaceful and loving environment. You cannot blame another. You must look at your triggers, how you think and feel, and look at the space that you provide for others. Other people's mannerisms or attitudes can be severely impacted based on the space that you have around you, which is the space you facilitate. So if you're soft and loving, it's easy for people to have their guard down and reciprocate that. But it's amazing how, and I've experienced this before, where people are looking for fault and they're angry and they're triggered and they're looking for negativity or reasons to stay in that angered space. And they don't realize they're projecting it outward. They're looking for reasons to maintain that space. And then they might say, and they've said before, you know, why aren't you loving? Why aren't you this? Why aren't you soft? And it's not easy, especially over a period of time. If you feel like you're in a space where you're being attacked. So this chapter 7 is about turning that light inward, or that projection, or those ideas, or that blame. Turning it inward and looking into yourself to see what you feel you're lacking. I feel that anything you're looking for, so if you're looking for love, then you feel like you're lacking it within yourself to some degree. And not that there's anything wrong with relationships, I'm not saying that, but it's possible to feel a deep, deep love within yourself. So therefore, in that space, you do not need relationships. Doesn't mean you won't have one or you don't want them, but it means that you're not dependent on relationships. And I think this is healthy. So if you feel a deep love within yourself, the relationships you go into, you're in it because you want to be in it, not because you need someone to fulfill you, and one's healthy, one's not. the latter means that you become dependent on the other person, your happiness. And it might be nice, a honeymoon phase in a relationship, but it won't last if you are dependent on the other person. And I feel we all want someone that's strong too. We want someone that stands on their own two feet. Therefore, they can assist you if you're not feeling as strong, and you don't have to always prop up the other person. You can take turns supporting each other. The next paragraph goes into, no matter how much you want to set yourself free from this illusionary realm, it is impossible so long as you hang on to even one idea or thought. You are solely responsible for you. Knowing this, you may start understanding the personal entrapments of your mind. Even seeing through one thought will start setting yourself free from the limited confines of our thinking. The more shackles you break, the more you will start enjoying and embracing life's journey. So that's ultimately talking about seeing through every thought that doesn't serve you and every shackle or every link in the chain, so to speak, that you can break. You start developing a habit or a pattern, developing the ability to see through limiting, self-defeating thoughts. I talk about this a lot, about seeing through your thoughts, and it's easy in a way, but I talk about it as if it's common sense. But look, what is actually seeing through your thoughts? Like, I'm thinking maybe I should talk a bit more about that. Do you feel?
Yeah, clarification might be needed.
Well, I'll expand on questioning your mind then. So it's like you have a thought and you hold on to it and you repeat it over in your head to some degree. You refuse to let go or to expand that thought. Like, it's often when we're in pain, we justify it. We don't want to let it go because we think it gives us leverage over the other person or whoever it's involved in. And another person may not even know what that means. But in our own head, it's like, as long as I stick to this story, then I can justify this thought and the way I think. And ultimately what you're saying, essentially what you're saying is, I'm going to suffer and I can justify my suffering if I maintain this way of thinking, and then I'm going to hold you accountable. And it's amazing, or hold another accountable. And it's amazing how the other person doesn't even know that you're holding them accountable for something. So when I say question the thought, I understand a lot of people want to, well, it comes down to this. Seeing through the thoughts come down to, when we're suffering, we repeat our thoughts that create suffering over and over. It becomes a mantra. So instead of repeating this thought, and if we're not feeling good within ourselves, we must become aware of the thoughts that we're having. And you'll find, and Vipassana meditation or Vipassana retreats and meditations reveal these things to you. They show you how repetitive your mind and your thoughts are. And everything we're about is becoming aware of your thinking, your thoughts. So if you're not feeling good in yourself and you're having emotional response triggers, look at your thoughts and look at what they're telling you. And the very start is, do I know this for sure? Do I know 100% that this is how it is? The natural thing is to go, yeah, I know for sure. I know what this person thinks, and they really want to hurt me because of this or because of that. And I don't think this is innate in anyone. It's not the natural way of anyone. If someone's hurting or if they're creating pain for you, it's because they're hurting themselves. And that doesn't justify it. But I feel any thought that creates a pattern or locks you into a pattern of suffering or negativity, you must question its validity. You must question and try and pick apart. Like, when you blindly believe a thought, you're taking it to be 100% bang on. And you must question the possibility that maybe it's not 100% right. Maybe there's a small percentage that may be right, but there's so much more to this story and the other person or the situation. When people act out, that it's not just because of another person, it's an accumulation of misunderstandings and pain, might be to do with work, other friendships, other relationships to varying degrees, could be with their other children or children or family or work associates, could be to do with anyone.
Can I just, isn't there somewhere earlier in the book that you actually have a list of questions you can question yourself? Because I was thinking it's just to get a guide, you know, is there a list you can go through? But then I remembered that I think there is one early in the book.
There is a list.
Yes.
And that is in the introduction.
Yes.
You can go to the list and you can get some insight, but as you go further through the book, it brings up stuff and it talks about things from a different angle. It talks about what you need to do and to look into yourself. The book ultimately comes from a number of different angles. Talk about the importance of challenging negative thinking, negative thoughts. Talks about stop projecting onto others. Start taking responsibility for how you think and feel. Because there is, and I've met some amazing people throughout my life. When I met them, I wanted to discover what they knew. And there's only one way to be free within yourself and to experience true deep joy. And not to say that you can't, that you can enjoy having a drink with your mates or nature or whatever else it is, but on a deep, deep level over a long period of time, it's inconsistently day in, day out. You have to realize that you are 100% responsible for your thoughts, feelings, and actions. And the questioning your thoughts is how you start or how you begin to take your power back. And there will be a resistance within you to challenge pretty much each and every thought. So you grab the ones that are easy to see through. The easiest ones to challenge are the ones that you challenge. And if anyone struggles to see through a thought, reach out to me. I'm good at asking questions and helping to unravel that. It's one of the things that I really enjoy. So you start with the simple ones and you develop a strategy and a habit and the confidence to start working through your thoughts. And as you start with smaller ones, you get better and better at it. You start to challenge more and more thought patterns or negative thoughts. This comes down to even on a subtle level of cracking jokes, negative jokes about yourself and running yourself down jokingly. The psyche doesn't know that you're joking. This is hypnosis. I've got my diploma in hypnosis as well, clinical hypnosis. And the psyche doesn't know when you're joking. I've mentioned this before. If you're going to crack a joke about yourself, do it in an uplifting way. So slowly, slowly, you start convincing yourself that you're worth more. That's what I recommend. I think it's important, though, to, this is obviously in chapter 7, to talk about the person that's blaming the other, to get them to start becoming aware that they need to reflect inwardly. They need to have a look at themselves. And it doesn't matter what the other person's doing. And I've mentioned this before in chats. I was in a relationship years ago. I was being attacked a little bit at the time. And I was looking into myself. I was on the spiritual journey and I was blaming myself for the pain that people around me were suffering, or even my partner, and an entrapment that I fell into playing sport in a way. And I think a lot of sports fall into this, where that they always want to achieve perfection and nothing's ever good enough. So they just go harder and harder and harder. You can drive yourself into the ground. And in my relationships at times throughout my life, I'd blame myself for certain things. And not always. Sometimes I don't blame myself at all. And sometimes it's easy to blame others. But on the spiritual journey, you start looking in many directions and you go through patches, well, I did, where I blame myself. And I had friends come up to me and say, well, you know, they're lying, they're doing these things, doing that. And my response to that was, well, I'm going to look into myself anyway, because it's about learning to be honest with yourself. And I said to this person, this friend of mine, I said, I'm not going to not look at myself, because they refuse not to look at themselves. So it's irrelevant. I need to still look at myself irrespective of what they're doing, because this is about my journey, my spiritual journey. Why should I limit mine or restrict mine because someone else isn't looking into themselves? It didn't make sense to me. But a lot of people justify, think, I'm not going to do this or look at that or look into myself unless you do. Like, why wouldn't you? So you're basically saying, if that's how you think or feel, that I'm not going to work through my suffering. I'm not going to gain understanding, which is the only way you can relieve yourself of suffering, is through true, deep understanding. I'm going to suffer as long as they do because I owe it to myself and them. But no, you don't. Be the first to break through, and then you can encourage others to do the same, you know, to break through your suffering as much as you can, every piece you can, as you go, as you travel through life. Because this chapter also talks about it's not the destination, it's the journey. And it talks about, and it's true, that the idea of the destination can limit your journey, because you have an idea of what you think it looks like when you get there. You're looking for something in particular. But to truly arrive at true deep understanding within yourself, you can't know that until you arrive. So be open to the possibility of what your destination or what the journey may entail. Be open to the possibility of what it may present. If you limit what the destination looks like, you may not go on certain paths because you don't think it'll take you where you need to go. And I'm not saying explore everything, do everything. That could be drugs, and you could run wild with that, do whatever I like. But it's about going with the intuition every step of the way without projecting an idea of the outcome. If you do practices to become more and more aware on your journey, you'll be able to think, see, and feel more. The potential of every step can enhance. Therefore, the destination that you feel you're achieving, because it's nothing wrong with being inspired. Like, let's say you want to awaken. There's nothing wrong with becoming inspired by an idea of that, but you can't be attached to the idea either. If you're in pain and suffering, then the idea of that will still be limited. As you break free, the experience of the freedom and the meaning in your life, you don't really know what that feels like or tastes like until you experience it for the first time. And life becomes more about the journey than the destination, but the destination definitely should inspire you. What you will find may just surprise you.
So yeah. Rewarding. Yeah, once you get a taste of it, you just want more and keep going deeper and deeper, and it's exciting.
But yourself, from your own experience, Linda, where we've spoken about different aspects, different things, and in your head, you've always had a knowing. I've encouraged you, since I've known you, to put that aside and just feel. And then there's times where things have just crumbled and you've just let go of certain things you thought you knew. You've just surrendered to some degree without even realizing because of the practices you're doing or things you're doing. And it's like, oh. And then the whole mind idea, the concept in a sense, just melts away.
Mm.
That's how I perceive it, but that's my word. But what you've told me and the opening, and from there, the wisdom and the understanding just deepens.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of contradictory in a way, because intellectually I felt I knew it, but I didn't know how to apply it, even though I thought I was on some level applying it. But the more you let go of that intellectual thought, the more you actually do live it and experience it. So it sounds contradictory in many ways, but the more you let go of that thought pattern, the more you ease into it.
I feel a good way to describe that is it's like the depth of understanding and heart is fluid, and intellectual understanding is like it's everything's in a box. It's like psychology to some degree. Yeah. Everything's in boxes, and it might be a massive box, but it still has structure and guidelines. But when it's fluid, the experience that can be felt in an understanding and by letting go, words will always fall short. Words will never be enough. And I feel it's about, and what I encourage is be prepared to be overwhelmed by your heart. And I see this a number of people. So let go of everything you think you know and feel. And it's not necessarily that easy to do, but it's something to practice. And then when you've been swept away or lost in an experience, you know yourself, when you've tried to explain some things to me, words fall short.
For sure.
They can't really describe what you've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
So use words the best you can. So when you get caught on the description and the words, there are limitations within that. That probably describes best how it is, where it's not an emotional experience, it's something more, but it can trigger an emotional response. But it's so much more. Words are never enough. So if words are your guide, then you must let go and learn to feel. That's where I've said before that I believe that the heart rules and the mind interprets the heart as best it can.
Mm-hmm.
But it will still fall short of the experience of heart. And it's a hard thing to get your head around, but it's basically saying to go deeper into yourself, it's about going beyond the mind in a sense, to the heart where everything falls short. It's just the experience in itself, which is profound. And that's where it's hard. It's all about analogies. Everything we say is analogies. It's very, very hard to describe an experience. And I just think words and formulas, black and white, like mathematics, although there's depths to that as well, sacred geometry and synchronicities and all sorts of things and the balance of things, but which I'm definitely not an expert in those things. But I can imagine, I know there's the vibrations of things. There's a lot of magic in a sense and science that's profound. The trap is that when we live within certain structural, certain formulas, becomes too black and white. And meaning of life and the joy, once you let go, the experience and that the potential of experience becomes more fluid, it's more immersive than just looking at a graph or a formula. That's why I feel to really express something, if you express through your heart, there's a softness, there's something that gets in, that gets through. I can go, I could say, someone, I love you. Mine's like, oh, I really love you. You're amazing. And one, you feel, wow, this potency behind it, where if it's just structured without the connection of heart or love or feel, then there are so many limitations. So that's probably the best way to describe the potential of letting go and becoming immersed in the possibility of more rather than defining it by an idea in your head that's too structured and too limited based on one's potential lack of insight or the limited thinking or thoughts or the projecting or the control. If that's the world you live in, there are limitations. Or the more one is controlled by these aspects of the mind, the more limited the projections or ideas or possibilities are, because you have to let go and to grab hold. And I've said a number of times, to grasp something new, you must be prepared to let go of something old. And then as soon as you grab hold of or you discover something new, that can be expanded on as well. So about clinging to nothing, following the guide that makes sense, that your gut tells you, following that and being open to more. And it might just feel like a vulnerable way to live, but it's an exciting way to live, because you begin to trust in letting go. You begin to trust your own intuition, and whether you believe in God or the divine, you start trusting that things happen for a reason, and you start looking for the meaning and reason behind things. And with that, the right attitude, you look for the jewel in the, or the diamond in the rough in all circumstances and situations. And I think that is profound. And so in many cases, this is another paragraph in the book, a small one. Mm-hmm. In many cases, it does not take much investigating to see through our thinking. It's just a matter of training ourselves to know how. As the great Hans Matraj Maharaji from Satchidam Ashram in India used to say, slowly, slowly, I had the privilege of meeting that amazing, amazing saint. Having an expectation or an idea of how quickly you should progress is, of course, another entrapment of our thinking, and we'll also have seen through. Maharaj used to say, slowly, slowly, and I've mentioned this before too, if you have an expectation, it's also an obstacle. So people meditate for an outcome or to become something, but ultimately the goal is to meditate just to be and let go of any expectation. When you let go of expectation in meditation, or you watch your thoughts, you know, you can watch your breath, and like in a basic meditation, you can watch your breathing, be aware of your breathing. Anytime you get taken by a thought or a thought, so they'll half take you, then they'll take you somewhere else and another one will come in, but that's okay. Don't be hard on yourself. As soon as you remember, come back to being aware of your breathing. And that's a great way to calm and see how active your mind is. And it's not about not thinking at all. It's hardly anyone can do that. It's about not falling into the temptation of the thought. And every time you remember that you've gotten lost in the thought, you come back to your breathing. And over a period of time, your thought will slowly mitigate. But if you feel that you can't meditate because you have too many thoughts, when you sit there, get a pen and paper and write down those thoughts. So the mind will you put all these scenarios in your mind, in your psyche, and you can get lost in it. Think, oh, it's just, I can't calm it down. I can't settle it down. Just write it all down, even if it's a massive list. And then go back to it and think, this is all rubbish, or half of it's rubbish, all this stuff. Or you might think this stuff's important. Well, you've got it written down now. You can put it aside. You can let it go. So by sitting there and focusing on your breathing and see how much your thoughts will have you, and often they will entice you through fear. Fear of if you don't follow the thoughts, something will happen, or you're not prepared for something, or you're not prepared for this or that. Or it's amazing. It takes so much energy to follow this stuff day in, day out. I couldn't imagine doing that anymore.
No, the ultimate nightmare.
I used to be there. No, lost in the minutes. Yeah, it takes so much energy.
Got to constantly feed it.
Yeah, exactly right. And it will destroy you over a period of time. Take so much energy. Yeah, so there's practices and processes to slowly, slowly work through them. Don't give them so much priority, so much credibility, and see which ones are useless and which ones are just. Learn to laugh at them if you can. If it feels like there's too much happening, definitely write it down. Write down your thoughts. See how many of them are actually valid. And that's a great way to start seeing through them. Write them down. And then if there's a lot going on within you when you're calm, when you're in a sort of a semi-neutral space, go back over your thoughts, the things you wrote down, and have a look at how ridiculous some of your thoughts are. That's a great starting in beginning to see through your thoughts.
Mm.
And then you'll know, you might think, okay, even in the worst case scenario, you might think, okay, out of these 10 thoughts, two of them I know for sure aren't real. Okay, well, you've cut it down. So then you can start thinking, well, hang on a minute, I'm believing every thought, but yet I've found out that there's a certain percentage of them that aren't real, that I know for sure aren't real. In actual fact, none of them are real, but it's easy to say. And if they're impacting you, and if you say, well, I know the thoughts aren't real, I know this, I know that. Well, if they have you, if they impact you, then you don't know it. Just an idea. As long as thoughts have you, you're being impacted by them and you're believing them. If they create a reaction within your body, your emotion, then you're believing them. It's different too if you're, you know, you do visualization or use your imagination to visualization and you see yourself at a tropical island. You can feel the breeze on your skin and hear the waves lapping on the shore, and it's like, so you're not necessarily believing them, but you can go into the experience. So even when you know thoughts aren't real, you can still enjoy them. And if you know they're not real, you can enjoy them more because you have control over them, where they go. If you fight with them, arm wrestle with them, then they will have you most of the time. And this is everything we're about, is helping and assisting and encouraging one to crawl out of that dark hole that they feel they're in at times and discover something more.
I think also,
You go.
I was just thinking, each time you don't act on something like you normally would, something that triggers you, something, you know, if you get angry or if you get nasty or whatever it is, every time you don't act on it, you're training yourself to change your ways as well, I think, and letting go of that as well. I think even if it's 9 out of 10, you're still reacting, but that one time, you're then on your way to being able to do it less and less and less.
Yeah. And I feel, to just clarify on that a little, by not acting, it's not about not being triggered or not acting on you being triggered and then you're pretending that you're not acting on it. If you're triggered, by not acting, it means seeing through. So if you're triggered and you say nothing, you know, okay, I didn't act on that. But if you don't see through that and question it and see why you reacted, even if you didn't act on it, if you don't investigate that, then you'll build resentment. And then when you go off, you'll just really go off because it'll all build up.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying, but for clarification, just a little.
It's about
not being triggered genuinely to the core.
Mm.
Or you may not be triggered as much. So then you look at what part of that did trigger you a little.
Mm.
So it's about unraveling. It's not necessarily about the outward appearance of things. It's about inwardly, whether you react or not. It's like creates ripple in the pond, investigate the ripple. And if it creates a massive wave or tidal wave of emotions, then there's a lot to investigate.
Mm.
But as the ripple, the massive tidal wave or the emotional response, as that minimizes, it's smaller and smaller, it becomes a ripple. It's like, that's, you know, you develop the ability to see through each and every wave or ripple. Then in the end, the pond will just be still. And it might be a very slight ripple, but it dissipates in no time. Because it's not normal to go around not being impacted by things. It's like people can say things and you might go, whoa. Mm-hmm. You might, but the difference is where, for myself, my experience, I used to react to people going, I used to roar sometimes and then I'd be mulling over for days. I can roar now. And then there'd be, should I have done this? And maybe it's I overcooked it here, or there's this, or there's that, and then I'll be going back and forth. Where now, if I defend my honor or someone else's honor or something, at the end of it, instead of feeling good, I feel, wow, that was awesome. I feel empowered because I feel like I was able in that. Instead of going silly and going, I'll kill you, it's like, oh, I was able to. And as you start unraveling and discovering more within yourself, you. And people can do this, and that you can develop a way to express yourself even when you're angry or you're triggered or you're defending your honor or someone else's. You can actually navigate your way through in a common sense point of view, and you can get your point of view across, or you can be rational. You can make sense. They're going, I'll cure you. I don't care. He's like, no, no, how dare you? This is this. And you can break things apart just like you pull things apart, put them back together, make sense. So then you express yourself in a way that's a wiser way to express rather than stumping or saying anything and everything you can say just for the sake of it. So
more rational.
You can stand up for yourself and even roar like a lion, but it can be irrational, not out of control. Yeah. So it becomes concise. So this the potency of what you can access and how you can express even under certain amounts of duress, but the duress isn't a way of do or die. So it's just more of a controlled roar.
Yeah.
And you don't lose yourself any more than you have to. And it becomes an empowering experience where there's no regret because you're not dumping the fact that you're picked on for most of your primary school, high school days, and you're letting out of that one person that said something that you might have misinterpreted. So then you dump 20 years or 18 years of being picked on or 15 years of being picked on. It's not about that. It's about it becomes concise in that moment as you start seeing through your own thoughts and your own negativity. When you trigger more and more because you work through stuff, the other person tends to get the dose they deserve without going out of control. Therefore, you have more peace. Well, people have good a lot of time because when they go off, they fully lose control and it's an accumulation of anger and frustration that they haven't worked through. And then once you were guilty because they've dumped way too much on the person, said hurtful things, they're just expressing all their pain over a number of years and some of that pain may have nothing to do with the person that's in front of you. So that's why it's important. Another reason it's important to work through the pain, suffering, misunderstandings, and the things that hold you back, that whole arm wrestle of guilt and things being out of control, gets negated, start gaining control, and you don't fear confrontation because you feel there's nothing wrong with expressing things that are right or righteous, which is based on morality and integrity, not on a point of view that you don't like theirs, so you're going to squash them. Everyone has a right to express, but everyone must be respected in that, and that's lost today. It seems to be a lost art today with certain media outlets and whatnot, but anyway, that's another story. So that's chapter 7. So that's a small chapter, but once again, I like going into what the chapter's about, what it's tapping into, and what it's encouraging to change, the changes it's encouraging. That's the great thing about these chats is you can read the book, but it can give a slightly different view and go more in depth into what I was intending for each chapter because I try to keep it as short as possible to simplify things. And then we can expand on the simplification based on where it naturally goes during our conversation, which I'm enjoying. So next, we've got chapter 8, Embracing Change, Breaking the Mold. Thanks once again for listening in and look forward to the next one. Bye for now.